The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi, the wife of King Nabhi, and was known as Rishabdev. He performed materialistic yoga to equibalance his mind. The sage is also accepted as the highest perfectional situation of liberation, wherein one is situated in oneself and is completely satisfied. Please repeat after me. The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi, the wife of King Nabhi, and was known as Rishabdev. He performed materialistic yoga to equibalance the mind. This stage is also accepted as the highest perfectional situation of liberation, wherein one is situated in oneself and is completely satisfied. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Out of many types of mystic performances for self-realization, the process of Jara Yoga is also accepted by authorities. The Jara Yoga involves practicing becoming like a dumb stone and not being affected by material reaction. Just as a stone is indifferent to all kinds of attacks and re-attacks of external situations, similarly one practices Jara Yoga by tolerating voluntary infliction of pain upon the material body. Such yogis, out of many self-infliction methods, practice plucking out the hair on their head without shaving or without any instrumental help. But the real purpose of such Jara Yoga practice is to get free from all material affection and to be completely situated in the Self. At the last stage of his life, Emperor Rishabdev wandered like a dumb madman, unaffected by all kinds of bodily mistreatment. Seeing him like a madman, wandering naked, with long hair and a long beard, less intelligent children and men in the street used to spit on him and urinate on his body. He used to lie in his own stool and never move. But the stool of his body was fragrant like the smell of fragrant flowers, and a saintly person would recognize him as a Paramahansa, one in the highest stage of human perfection. One who is not able to make his stool fragrant should not, however, imitate Emperor Rishabdev. The practice of Jara Yoga was possible for Rishabdev and others on the same level of perfection, but such an uncommon practice is impossible for an ordinary man. The real purpose of Jara Yoga, as mentioned here in this verse, is prashanto karana, or subduing the senses. The whole process of yoga, under whatever heading it may be, is to control the unbridled material senses and thus prepare oneself for self-realization. In this age specifically, this Jara Yoga cannot be of any practical value. But on the other hand, the practice of Bhakti Yoga is feasible because it is just suitable for this age. The simple method of hearing from the right source, Srimad Bhagavatam, will lead one to the highest perfectional stage of yoga. Rishabdev was the son of King Nabhi and the grandson of King Agnidra, and he was the father of King Bharat, after whose name this planet Earth was called Bharat Varsha. Rishabdev's mother was also known as Meru Devi, although her name is mentioned here as Su Devi. It is sometimes proposed that Sudevi was another wife of King Nabhi, but since King Rishabdev is mentioned elsewhere as the son of Meru Devi, it is clear that Meru Devi and Sudevi are the same person under different names. So, King Rishabdev, we know, was a very, very great personality. And this is the real sign of Krishna consciousness, that in Krishna consciousness one can give up any position that he may have. Like King Rishabhdev was a king with great opulence and great power, but King Rishabhdev actually gave up his kingdom. When his sons grew up, then Rishabhdev gave up his kingdom and left his palace, and he just kept on wandering. And that is how Rishabhdev was teaching people how one should act. Maha jano jena gatasya pantha. Generally people want to follow the footsteps of the Mahajan, or the great personalities are always followed by the rest of the society. That's the natural tendency. And Rishabhdev here, taught us that how a Mahajan should behave. Till we know that Mahajana Jana Gatasya Pantha, all the great personalities should be followed, but sometimes the Lord makes arrangements to act as a perfect great personality, and he did it through Rishabhdev. That Rishabhdev was a king with very great power, with beautiful children, very nice Krishna conscious children, very beautiful wife, lot of opulence. But Rishabhdev felt that now I have reached 50 and my children have grown up, so now I must leave home. And when Rishabhdev decided that, he called his sons and he gave them instructions and he left home. So this is the real Mahajan, or this is the activity of a real Mahajan, and this kind of Mahajan should be followed. Not some rogues and rascals. Nowadays that's what is happening. I mean, all the so-called leaders of the society are actually most degraded people. Most degraded people. They are... I remember somebody told that Henry Kissinger, he was actually very great at that time, very powerful man, and told Prabhupada that Henry Kissinger was seen in a topless bar. And Prabhupada got very angry. Prabhupada said, topless, bottomless? He said, these rascals are destroying this world. So these are the leaders. These people are leading the world today, but actually they didn't even learn how to control their sex desire. So how these people can become leaders? What to talk about controlling the sex desire? They're the most permissive people. They're most greatest debauchees. Actually, bigger the person nowadays, the bigger of a rascal he is. And actually that is the position of Kali Yuga. In the age of Kali, Kali takes over. That is, irreligiosity takes over. And Kali actually patronizes the people, those who are irreligious. In this age of Kali, the sadhus suffer, the saintly people will suffer materially, but the demon will flourish. So, because he is the ruler of adharma, Kali, and now it is his time, so he makes all his followers big leaders of the society. And that's how he's guiding the society. And that's where you can see that nowadays, actually, all the people, those who are big, they are teaching others, the rest of the society, how to indulge in all sinful activities. We see that how these four regulative principles are broken and people are indulging in these sinful activities. And nowadays we can see that the biggest business is actually these four, that breaks these four regulative principles. Meat is a big business, intoxication is a big business, prostitution is a big business,
And gambling is a big business.
If anyone wants to make money in the material world, they think of doing these things. These are the main businesses they have. And that's how they are destroying the society. But Rishabhdev here pointed out, Rishabhdev is actually an incarnation of Krishna. He is a Shaktavish incarnation. And Rishabhdev taught us how actually one should become a leader of the society. That is, one should be detached completely. He may be the king. He may be the king of the whole earth planet, but he should give up his kingdom. So that shows that how detached he is. Nowadays some people with little bit of money, little bit of material possession, they think, how can I give it up? They become so attached. What to talk about opulence, whatever one has, he becomes attached to that. Like once in Rishikesh, I remember, not Rishikesh, Allahabad. At that time Prabhupada was in Allahabad during the Kumbh Mela, and we all went to see Prabhupada. That's the first time I actually met Prabhupada. And so there, one day I was going, I was a very new devotee. But I was very fired up to preach. So I was going in a rickshaw, and I was preaching to the rickshawala, the rickshaw puller. And he was very nice, he was responding very nicely. He said, yes, that's true, that's, I like it very much. And, you know, I was telling him about how Krishna is God and how everybody should serve Krishna. And so he was responding very nicely. So finally I thought that maybe this is my, he can become a devotee. So I told him, so why don't you come and join us? And you can come and live with us and become a devotee of Krishna. And he said, how can I? Because you see, I just bought this rickshaw. And how can I give it up? So that's how everyone feels. Somebody may be attached to his rickshaw, or somebody may be attached to his Mercedes Benz. But it's the same attachment. And it's the same useless attachment. Attachment to a rickshaw, attachment to a Mercedes Benz. Attachment to a small heart, or attachment to a kingdom. It's the same material attachment. And a saintly person, a person situated in knowledge, knows that this is useless, this is meaningless. And the goal of life is to become free from that attachment. Because ultimately when the time comes for us to leave the body, when the time comes when we are dying, then we have to get rid of all attachments. What to talk about other attachments, even you have to get rid of the body's attachment. And our attachment to the body is the greatest attachment. Other things we may give up, but body's attachment we cannot give up. And then again, greater still is the attachment of the subtle body. So we have our attachment to the gross body, but stronger is the attachment to the subtle body. And ultimately we even have to get rid of the subtle body's attachment. Like if we think, oh, now I am dying, so it's good. After all, I'm a spirit soul, and I'm getting rid of this gross material body, which is old and dilapidated. So now I'm going to get a new body, and I'll enjoy it. Even that is Maya. So just to have the spiritual knowledge, or realizing that we are not this body but we are the spirit soul, is not enough. The ultimate thing is that we have to develop our love and attachment for Krishna. So when we develop our love and attachment for Krishna, then only we can become free from the gross body's attachment and even subtle body's attachment. And in between there is another stage where one tries to become the spirit,
spiritual entity who is beyond this material nature. So even that is not enough. Like even our spiritual identity without our relationship with Krishna is not valid. So that is also another dangerous position where we recognize ourselves as spirit, but we do not recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are called the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis, they recognize themselves as spirit and they practice to get rid of the body's bondage, but they do not accept Krishna, and that's why they cannot enter into the spiritual realm. So here Rishabhdev is pointing out that how one should live his life, how one should live his life, and he gave up his kingdom and he kept on traveling around like a mendicant. And this is actually the real sannyas life. Sannyas life has four different stages. One is called Kutichak, then Bahudak, then Paramahamsa, then Paribrajak, and then Paramahamsa. Kutichak, Bahudak, Paribrajak, and Paramahamsa. Now Kutichak stage, one leaves home but stays close to his home, and maybe he leaves his home but he stays in the same village. And his household, the people from his house provide for his food. They come and give him the food. But he lives under a tree on the bank of a river. So that is, we can see that how practical the Vedic culture was. Like if one just left all of a sudden, then it may have become a premature thing. So that's why the arrangement was that fine, you gradually become detached from your attachment. So stay close to your home and food is provided. And then this person, after this Kutichak stage, he would take the Bahudak stage. Then he won't wait for the food to come from his house. He would go and beg from house to house. That's called Bahudak. And this is how he would maintain himself. And then the third stage is called Paribrajak. Then he would just become a traveling mendicant. He would just travel constantly from one place to another. And then, when he is totally detached from all material attachments, then he would be considered as a Paramahamsa. By traveling without any attachment, without any bondage, one becomes detached totally. And then he becomes a Paramahamsa. So Rishabhdev in the final stage displayed the activities of a Paramahamsa. He didn't have any consideration for the body. He was completely absorbed in the spiritual situation. And he didn't wear any clothes. Since he didn't have any feeling for his body or any concern for his body, he didn't care whether the body is covered or uncovered. He was not at all in his bodily consciousness. Actually, the children are like that. The children don't feel ashamed because they don't have that body consciousness. Of course, that is another extreme. It's the opposite to this Paramhamsa thing. The Paramhamsas are situated in absolute knowledge, and that's why they are totally free from their bodily concept of life, whereas the children, they are in absolute ignorance. That's why they are not in bodily concept of life. Actually, two opposites are alike, appears to be alike. For instance, the sunrise and sunset appears to be alike. When the sun is coming up and when the sun is going down, to look at it, it looks the same. The same way, the Paramahamsa and a person and complete ignorance are alike. The children are the children's activities are like that of Paramahamsa in a way. The children also don't have any concern for their body.
Like they don't know when to eat, they don't actually have any such desire for eating or sleeping or mating or defending. But they are in complete ignorance. Whereas Paramhamsas, being situated in perfect knowledge, they become totally free from all these physical desires. Our children also, like as it has been described here, our children also lie down in their own stool without having any concern. And Prabhupada is saying that Paramhamsa, like Rishabhdev, he didn't have any concern, he used to lie in his own stool. But Prabhupada is pointing out that his stool was fragrant, like beautifully fragrant flowers. So that is what is the understanding, like when one becomes very, very elevated, then he becomes completely spiritual. And everything around about him also becomes spiritual. Whereas when we are in the material platform, then we even convert the spiritual into material. That is the difference. Like a spiritualist, he will convert matter into spirit. But a gross materialist will convert spirit into matter. And that's exactly what has happened. Like ultimately, actually, everything is sarvam khallidam brahma. Everything is spiritual, ultimately. Ultimately, everything is spiritual. But because of our perverted consciousness, everything has become material to us. Regarding that one sannyasi gave an example. I found it was, although it's a little gross, but it was a nice example to consider our condition. He said that our condition is like we take prasad, which is Krishna, transcendental food, and we turn it into stool. that is how our condition is. But a spiritualist, when one is perfectly situated in spiritual platform, for him everything actually becomes spiritual. And that is the understanding of why we take the remnant of the advanced devotees. That because by coming in contact with them, that food has become spiritual. And by taking that food, we become spiritual. So that's why Vaishnavas generally don't want to give his remnants to others. He never feels that he is that advanced. But of course we have to understand here that Rishabhdev was not in the age of Kali. Rishabhdev was in a different age. And at that age this was the process. People could leave home, people could lead the life of a Paramahamsa the way Rishabhdev did. But in this age it is not possible. Prabhupada pointed out time and time again that in this age the process is chanting the holy name of the Lord and we do not have to follow any other means. But if we artificially try to follow or imitate Rishabhdev, then there will be great danger. Like Prabhupada said that if one wants to follow Rishabhdev or imitate Rishabhdev, then he should wait till his stool becomes fragrant. So that is the indication. Like before, and until that time, one should chant Hare Krishna. And exactly that's what happened. Like when Rishabhdev was here, some people began to follow him, imitate him. And it is actually the king of a province called Konka and Venka. Konka and Venka, what's his name? Arhat. King Arhat, he saw Rishabhdev as a, although he didn't have anything, although he was just like a madman and doesn't have any attachment and doesn't have any concern for his body, but he's so popular. Like everybody is after him. Whereas he's a king and nobody gives a damn about him. So he became very envious. Envious, of course, he didn't show the envy, but internally he was envious. And he felt that if he behaved like Rishabhdev, then he'll also become famous. And so he started doing that. And he started imitating Rishabhdev's activity. And from him started a line, a parampara of demons called the Jains. He is their first preceptor. Arhat started the Jain cult. And they also do like that. They move around naked and they torture their body just to show that they do not have any body consciousness. Or even if it is not to show, but themselves, for themselves to become aware that they are not in body consciousness. So they would inflict all kinds of pain into the body. Like they would tear their hair off, they wouldn't shave their head. They would pluck their hair. And not only hair, they would pluck their beard off. I mean, they are just actually, ultimately they all are demons. And they would not eat, they would just walk. Even now, they don't use transportation. In India, they go from place to place by walking. So, but the thing is, ultimately, they are actually demons. They are not following Rishabhdev's footsteps. If they followed Rishabhdev's footsteps, then they would have followed Srimad Bhagavatam. If they followed Rishabhdev's footsteps, then they would have followed Krishna. But instead, they were simply imitating Rishabhdev. They did not accept Rishabhdev's teaching, but they simply accepted Rishabhdev's external activity, just in order to get some name and fame, or at the most, just because of the misunderstanding. They didn't understand what actually is the goal of life. They simply thought that the goal of life is just to become totally unattached or totally unaffected by the body's needs. But that is not the goal of life. That's the side effect of the goal of life. What is the goal of life? The goal of life is Krishna prema. The goal of our life is to develop our love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna will give us the detachment. It says that bhakti has two... Bhakti is the mother, devotion is the mother, and Bhakti Devi has two sons. And those two sons are Jnana and Vaidanta. Knowledge and renunciation. So wherever the mother bhakti is there, knowledge and renunciation is automatically there. We don't have to look for knowledge and renunciation separately. So that is how devotee makes his approach. We do not want to become detached. On the other hand, we actually want to become attached. We simply want to become attached to Krishna. And when you become attached to Krishna, we automatically become detached to matter. Because it's a natural tendency. Attachment is a natural tendency. Only when you have more, then you can give up less. Like if somebody comes and tells you, give me 5 marks, and I'll give you 5,000 marks. What will you do? It's a big 5 marks. So you can become detached to your 5 marks. But why? Because you know that you are getting 5,000 marks. So you're not giving up your attachment, but you are actually using your attachment in an intelligent way. Now a layman will think, oh, he's giving, all he has is 5 marks, and he's giving it to me. See, such a fool. That's how the materialistic people think, see us, when they see us given up our material attachment. And this material attachment is not even worth 5 marks. It's not even worth 5 pennies. The material attachment doesn't have any value whatsoever. By offering our material attachment, or getting rid of our material attachment by offering this 5 pennies, what we get in return is not even 5,000 pennies. It is even more than 500 trillion friends or more. It is, it's valueless. What we get in exchange, in return, cannot be measured by any amount. It's valueless. What we get in exchange, in return, cannot be measured by any amount. That's what we can see, that you put all, you know, if you put Krishna in the one side of the balance, and on the other side you put all the wealth, which side will weigh heavier? Which side will be heavier? Krishna's side or all the wealth side? Which side? Jack? Very good. So which value should we take? So should we go for all the material wealth? And no matter how much you try, we'll never get all the wealth of this world. We'll get only a fraction of this wealth. So now in one side we have Krishna and one side we have the rest of the world. But still, it doesn't really match Krishna. So why should we not go after Krishna? So when you go after Krishna, then automatically everything becomes attained. And we know that if we even get just a small piece of stone from the spiritual sky, what's it called, Govinda Mahārāja? Chintamani, touchstone. A small little stone from spiritual sky. What is the quality of that stone? Laghu? Vaishu? What? Right. So if you have a small little stone from spiritual sky, can you imagine how much wealth you can get in the material platform? Like you can just take a piece of iron and touch it with that stone and it will immediately turn into gold. Right? And how much money you can get? You have so much iron pieces. Does it cost anything? Scrap iron? No. Practically nothing. And you can buy all the scraps, right? And touch it with the touchstone and then it will just become a mountain of gold. Right? So, this way you can see that the spirit, and it's not a story, it's not a fairy tale, it's not some fiction, it's a fact. So, all this material wealth doesn't have any value compared to the spiritual value. So when you become attached to spiritual sky, then automatically you become detached. Like even today, I mean, we don't have to go very far, although we are not very advanced ourselves, spiritually. But if somebody comes and tells us, now do you want a touchstone? Of course not touchstone, that is spiritual. But if somebody comes and tells us, I'll give you 1 million mark, you give up Krishna consciousness. Will you agree? No. There are many devotees, parents, offered actually a lot of wealth. Come back. Like, I know of one devotee, that is Giriraj Maharaj. His father is very rich. And so his father, and he is the only son. His father tried so much to get him back. But he won't. I mean, if he just goes, he joins his father, he'll immediately become a millionaire. But still he doesn't want to. Why? Because he knows that compared to Krishna consciousness, this $1 million or millions of dollars is useless. So that is the sign of a devotee. And that's why we should always guard ourselves, always warn ourselves that we do not fall into Maya. Why should we want anything material?
But still we are running after material things. Why? Because we use them in Krishna's service. It's not that we say that we do not want money. Only we don't take money if it is a choice between money and Krishna. But if the money can be used in Krishna's service, then of course we take it. Then we take it. What to talk about taking it? Actually, for that, we have become beggars. Actually, a devotee is like a beggar. It's not in the West, but in India, in the early days, they used to be like that. They never used to have any possession. Nothing. They would just go from house to house and beg something. But they would spread Krishna consciousness. That was the position. And this begging for Krishna is actually the most glorious in the material. In the materially, to beg is very, very disgraceful. Materially, no man with a certain amount of pride would like to beg. Like, for me, just the thought of even begging used to just make me feel very ashamed. But now, I wish when that day will come, when I'll be totally free from all responsibility and I'll be able to beg from door to door without having any attachment. And really that will make me a little humble. So, and also now our whole life has become the life of a beggar. Sannyasi or a devotee means beggar. That is, they do not have any possession. They simply depend on others. And I can see that by Krishna's mercy, I do not have any need. Like, of course, we also have a very well-organized society. And that's why we do not, everything is taken care of. Like, when we serve Krishna, we get all the facilities. And I'm sure, as we spread Krishna consciousness, Krishna will give us everything. Like, although we are beggars, but Krishna has given us so much. Like, generally people think that we are so opulent. They ask, the first thing they ask the outsiders, when you talk to them, practically one of the first questions is, where do you get your money? Where do you get your money from? Because they can see that we are so opulent. And my answer is, I tell them that actually it surprises me also. I also wonder, where is all this money coming from? And materially, of course, we can reason out that yes, this money is coming from book distribution, this money is coming from donations, life membership, our business, and so on and so forth. But ultimately we know that this money is coming just as the blessings of Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi is pleased with us when she sees that we are serving Krishna. And she gives us everything. And she will give us everything. That's why Prabhupada always said that don't worry about money. Don't worry about money. Money will automatically come. You just go on spreading Krishna consciousness. And we are seeing that as we serve Krishna, as we distribute Prabhupada's books, as we preach the glories of Krishna, Lakshmi Devi provides us with everything. So why should we make some unnecessary endeavor to make money? And that's why Prabhupada actually discouraged devotees doing business. So you don't have to do business. He said our biggest business is book distribution. And it's a fact. We can see that when we distribute books, the other day Jai Gurudev Prabhu was telling me that he is maintaining his Salzburg temple just by distributing books. And he was telling me that when you distribute books, then Krishna gives you just the right amount. You do not have anything less or anything more. Like Krishna just takes care of your basic needs. Because if you have more than what you need, then you will be in bondage. You'll use the money in different sense-gratifying ways. So it's better to just, Krishna sees that as we, whatever we need, He provides as we distribute books. And when you distribute books, then we are very safe, because then we are preaching. Everybody knows that we are Krishna. We are Krishna devotees. And we get a chance to preach to them. But when we hide our identity or do business, when you do business, we cannot really show ourselves as Hare Krishna. We have to show ourselves as one of them. And then they also behave with us like one of them, as if we are one of them. And that's what happens. Like, and then when they get to know that we are actually hiding our identity, then they feel, oh, these people are not very honest, which is natural. So that's why it is very important that we become very fixed up in our preaching activities, because our life is actually preaching, and Krishna will provide. So we must understand that the yuga dharma of this age is to spread Krishna consciousness, and we have to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. We don't have to go for austerities and penances, like as we read here. Like, we do not have to imitate Rishabhdev. We simply have to follow Rishabhdev. And following Rishabhdev, we'll become attached to Krishna. And when you become attached to Krishna, then we'll become detached automatically. And we do not have to artificially try to become detached. Ultimately, Krishna will take everything away from us. When the time comes, we will automatically become detached. Like, when the time comes for us to die, then we have to give up everything. So why artificially, when we have the opportunities to use our body in Krishna's service, then if we say that, well, I don't want to use this body, let me practice to be free from this body's attachment. But then, when the time of death comes, then you say, oh, I don't want to die. Now what's the use of that? Instead, it is better that we accept everything as Krishna's mercy. And then when the time comes, then we'll be able to also accept death as Krishna's mercy. Then we'll think, oh, now the Krishna has given us a chance to get rid of this body. So, let me be prepared. Actually, recently I had one experience. I had this nail smashed. I had one of my nails smashed in. And so part of the nail became dead, black. But the half of the nail was good. And sometimes I used to think that if I try to pull the nail out, it would hurt me so much. But then gradually the nail grew, and then it automatically fell off. So that's the case with our body also. Now if we try to pull the body out, or pull the spirit out of the body, it will be very painful. Right? If we try to get rid of the body, it will be very painful. Because our whole consciousness is actually into the body, and the body is very much aligned. But then gradually, as the nail grew, the same way the body will grow old. And as the body becomes old, our spirit will automatically become less and less attached to the body. Old age actually means the spirit becomes withdrawn from the body, or spirit's influence of the body reduces. And then, nature makes arrangements for us to become detached from the body. And then, when we become diseased, that helps us even more. Even now we notice that when we have fever, Don't you feel quite detached from the body? Then you feel, oh, this body doesn't really mean so much. Even Laghu feels that.
Yeah, Laghu was shaking. Isn't it true?
So,
we feel that way, that we become detached from the body. So can you imagine when a body becomes old, and then the body becomes diseased, so you automatically become very, very detached. And then when the time comes, you just leave the body and go back to Krishna. But of course, even if death comes now, still then we have to be prepared. Now that although we have the attachment to the body, we have to realize that now is the time when we have to think of Krishna. Now Krishna is actually helping me to become detached from this body. And let us go back. At least we'll go back to the next body, another body, and let us carry on serving Krishna in that body. That should be our goal. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yes. Yeah. Actually, Rishabhdev was preaching just by his activity, right? Just by seeing Rishabhdev, one could become devotee, if he was favorably disposed. And it's not that Rishabhdev was not teaching. Rishabhdev would teach to the right person. He would not waste his time just in giving a mass lecture. And another thing is that those days people were very advanced. So the ones, those were favorably disposed, just by seeing Rishabhdev, they could understand him. Only the ones in ignorance could not. Right? See, like for instance, one, often people ask, why Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami didn't preach? Right? Apparently they didn't go out and, you know, preach. But they did preach. The way they lived, that was preaching. And what to talk about all the books they wrote, that was preaching. They were the biggest preachers. But at that time, the time was not actually ready for this kind of preaching, the way we are doing now. So when the time became ready, Prabhupada came and he started the movement all over the world. Any other question? Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.